verses 8 through 16. Now, it's in the chapter. We often call this the faith chapter because we hear about those of old who were of faith, and we're reading this morning about Abraham and the others who were with him, including Sarah. Those who didn't merely have their eyes set upon the earthly things. Now, they were promised earthly blessings. And we've got the same thing. We are promised earthly blessings. We are given earthly blessings here upon the earth. And yet, they had their eyes set upon, finally, the heavenly blessings that were to come. We'll hear about the heavenly city that God had prepared for them. And that's where we need to check ourselves and make sure that we have our eyes in the same place. If you would, please stand. I'm going to read Hebrews chapter 11, 8 through 16. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. And those are words that remind us not to become too attached to the things of this world and focus upon them. We need to have our eyes on that which will not go away, which will not perish. You may be seated. So this morning we're continuing in Ecclesiastes with the larger passage that we began last week. Now it's the account of King Solomon, who was on his quest, if you recall, to find meaning and satisfaction in life. That may sound familiar to you. That's something that all of us really engage in life, a quest to find meaning and satisfaction. And he's looking at it from the perspective of engaging in all the things that life has to offer under the sun. He uses this phrase again and again. Now, what we've seen so far, we continue to see it today, is that what he's doing, he's refuting, or he's really destroying many of the messages that we receive from the world around us and messages that we so often accept for ourselves. You know, a few days ago, we were watching some coverage of Hurricane Irma and of Harvey and all the flooding that had resulted, and one of our kids asked the question, think about this question, why is it that reporters don't ever talk about Noah and the flood that occurred then? It's actually a great question. The question was this: why, with all the talk about flooding, why wouldn't there even be a mention about the mother of floods that occurred, the biggest flood in history? And so that gave us an opportunity to talk about worldviews and about how most of those in the world around us take what we see as history in the Bible and set it aside. They bring instead, most often, a different worldview. And it's a worldview that essentially leaves a holy God out of the picture entirely. And that's the world in which you and I live today. And that's what Solomon, in his day, was looking at here. when he spoke about life under the sun, or a couple of times he says under heaven, he's speaking about the messages that we receive from the world around us that leave God out of the picture, the true God. It's largely a materialistic worldview. It's focused upon the here and the now, and that's where true value and true meaning in this world is to be found. And so Solomon here is engaged in really testing out that worldview and the messages that it sends us. And so messages that come to us with great temptation. And so we need to pay attention to his findings here. Now, in the passage last week, he applied his test to wisdom itself. He's a very wise man, the wisest of all. And he applied his test to the mindset that learning and education and living wisely, that provides lasting meaning for us in life. And now today he moves from that and he tackles a number of other areas that will be very common to us as well. We'll likely see those in our own lives at different points. Now, we're reading a fair amount here. We're going through all of chapter 2. So I'll invite you to stand, but if you do have a difficulty standing at all as I read the word, please just remain seated, and we'll make it through it. But if you'd like to, please stand as I read Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and I'm going to be reading verses 1 through 26, the end of the chapter. This is God's word. And now this is Solomon speaking here. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses, planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold from the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil that I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them. Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so very wise? And I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance. Seeing that in the days to come, all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies, just like the fool. So I hated life, because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, for all is vanity and a striving after wind. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun, because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. What has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. There is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. Please join me in prayer. Father, we thank you for this word that we have this morning. We thank you for this man, Solomon. We thank you for the wisdom that you gave to Solomon, his ability to look at his life and to understand what was important and what was meaningful and purposeful, and on the other hand, what was not. And so, Father, I pray that as we go through this together, that we would likewise have that type of wisdom to be able to see in our own lives, in the things that we do day in, day out, what we put our attention into, what is valuable and what is of worth and what is not, what is meaningless. That's a difficult process to go through, but I pray that you would help us to go through it with the ultimate goal that we would see what is truly valuable in this world at the end of it. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. I want you to think about something for a moment. Can you think of times in your own life, no matter how young you are or how old, times when you have sought after, you've pursued whatever you believed would be fulfilling, would make you satisfied, only to have it turn out that any real fulfillment wasn't there to be had. You know, you were looking for one thing, but it wasn't to be found. Now, that's something that happens to all of us in this life, and sometimes in small ways, other times in big ways. You know, on a recent car trip that we took, we stopped by a Dunkin' Donuts, and my family knows that I love to stop by Dunkin' Donuts to get hot coffee as we continue on the road. And this particular time, we stopped by, got the coffee, got some donut holes as well, and then headed on our way. And it wasn't until we were out on the road that I picked up the coffee. I'd been looking forward to it for a number of miles up the road, and I tasted it, and it was cold. And I don't care for cold coffee. So the satisfaction that I was looking for, I didn't receive at all out of that coffee. Now, the same thing can happen in our lives in far bigger ways than that. And we see it also biblically in the lives of certain people. We see it in Jacob's life in the book of Genesis. This actually came up, I think, maybe it was Zach that brought it up this morning in our Sunday school class. But in Jacob's life, Jacob followed his father's direction, and he made the trip to his uncle Laban's house, and he was seeking a wife. And when he got there, just outside of town, he saw this woman coming toward him, a young woman, and she was coming, bringing all their sheep to water, and it turned out to be Laban's daughter, Rachel. And when Jacob saw her and they had their first interaction, you can tell it was kind of like love at first sight. And on the first account of their meeting, it says that Jacob kissed Rachel and wept aloud. Now, I'm certain this was just a kiss of greeting, but he wept aloud. And when he made it back to Laban's house, Jacob was fully accepted, welcomed into their house. He remained there at their house, and Laban gave him a job to do. And when Laban asked him what wages he would like for his work, Jacob replied that he would serve Laban for 7 years in order to have Rachel's hand in marriage. And the account said that Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance, and Jacob loved Rachel. And so Laban agreed to give his daughter to Jacob after Jacob served him for 7 years. And those were seven of the shortest years, it appears, in Jacob's life. The account says that after he had served 7 years, they seemed to him like or but a few days because of the love that he had for her. And so he labored hard during these 7 years, and it came time when he had earned the right to take Rachel's hand in marriage. They had the ceremonial feast that was part of their custom at the time, and evidently what was also part of their custom was that Jacob could not see his bride until the morning after they had been together. And so the account says the next morning when he got up, he looked, and behold, it was Leah, the woman that he had sought after all this time, was not there. Jacob had been deceived by Laban, and he was given a woman for whom he had really no desire, no feelings. And you can imagine what Jacob was thinking at that time, that this, you know, this wasn't a gift that I'm receiving. Now, this was an agreement that had been in place. I had earned my right to Rachel's hand in marriage, but it's not turning out as I had planned. And so he didn't get any of the satisfaction that he was looking for out of it. Now, after seven more years of labor, he was able to marry Rachel. But even then, we see in the account here that Jacob seemed to get very little satisfaction because Rachel, his wife, was barren, and she was very unhappy. The satisfaction and the fulfillment that Jacob had been looking for was not there to be had. It kept eluding him. And if we look at our own lives, that's how it often is, isn't it? That we look for satisfaction in a certain area, but it seems that it keeps eluding us. Those places in which we seek happiness and fulfillment, even though we may plan them out, we may do all the right things, often, they don't end up in the way that we had planned. They don't produce what they had promised. You know, we have expectations and pursue them, but it is like a chasing after the wind. Those are the words that Solomon uses. Solomon's showing us here, as we go through this passage, with these tests that he applied to his own life, that was true in his life, but he also shows something far beyond that, something far more disturbing, that in all of his life, that true satisfaction, as he pursued all things under the sun, that they eluded him. And he uses this word, vanity, that all of the satisfaction which he sought after, it was there for a moment, some of it, but then it was gone. And so he says it over and over again, it didn't bring true satisfaction. And so eight times in this passage, as we go through it, he comes to that conclusion. But he also highlights through all of this his one main message. And that we might miss in a passage like this that's so full of things that are difficult to hear, and that is that true happiness is possible in this life, and that there is real satisfaction to be had. But it requires a reorientation of our perspective on life. And so we're going to look at how he comes to this conclusion. And I'd like to get there by asking three questions that this passage answers for us. One of those is, what is, in this world, what is our pursuit? And really, it's there for every one of us. What is the one thing that we're led to pursue after? Secondly, what is our problem? What stands in the way of lasting fulfillment? And then finally, what is our prescription? So we've got three P's. What is our pursuit? What is our problem? What is our prescription, finally? What is it that fixes things for us, that meets our need? So first of all, what is our pursuit? I'll just say, and you know this, that there is a longing in every person's heart, a craving that cries out to be satisfied. And if we went around the world today, it is a motive that drives people to do the things often that they do, the activities that they involve themselves in, the relationships they have. And so what is that one thing, if we were to use a word that people would use to say what they were pursuing? It's that word, happiness. Now, we've got an unsatisfied longing inside. We want to fill it with something, and we describe that as being happiness. And so the world promises us a number of ways in which we can satisfy that longing inside. And so if we were to ask people, ask ourselves, we say, yes, I've got a number of ways. I've got avenues there. There's a target in front of me. And so Solomon makes happiness the chief end of his life. And so he tries out several of the ways in which the world promises happiness. And so he's testing. He's trying to see, does this or this or this, does it deliver on the promises that it makes? And so we see, for one, he speaks about laughter. He's probably talking about a lifestyle of entertainment of some kind. You think of the party scene that may happen at the end of a hard work week, or maybe on a college campus, maybe watching sitcoms on TV, lighthearted entertainment of whatever kind. But his conclusion is, he says, I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, of what use is it? Now, you may recall from last week that the word mad there doesn't mean what we may think of as someone being out of their mind so much as it does a foolish disobedience. Now we also see him talk about the use of alcohol, or today it may be alcohol and drugs, ways that promise enjoyment of a certain type to us, or maybe an escape. And so Solomon says, I searched with my heart to cheer my body with wine, my heart guiding me with wisdom. He says he continues on his search. He continues to have wisdom in the midst of it. We know why he's had to say that, because we know what alcohol does. But he was engaging in this. And again, he finds out that each of these, they don't deliver on what they promise. And next, there's kind of a long section there where he embarks on all different pleasures of life that in verse 4 he calls great works. And really, he's taking things to the extreme. You know, you and I will never possess, if we look at this list of things, we'll never possess all of these things. He talks about building houses and planting vineyards and gardens and parks and fruit trees. And he made for himself pools with which to water the forest, you know, male and female servants or slaves, great possession of herds and flocks. He gathered for himself silver and gold, singers, many concubines. It's one item after another. And Solomon even tells us that he achieved these things through hard labor, that it all came to him as a payment for his hard labor. He says in verse 10, that my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all of my toil. If you had asked him, so how did you come about these things? He would have said, well, I worked hard. I earned them. And so I had people who were working for me, and I achieved these. And yet, when he reflects back upon all of these things, even though he had said at one point that he held his heart back from no pleasure whatsoever, he went after it all, but he said it wasn't enough. That the emptiness and the unsatisfied longing still remained. So think about it. You and I will never possess or achieve anything close to what Solomon did and what he had in his life. But what does that say for us about all the ways that we do and we are tempted to go after and find happiness in this life? You know, several years ago, 60 Minutes did an interview with Tom Brady, quarterback for the New England Patriots. And it's been around for a while. You can find it on YouTube. So you may have seen it. At that point, when they did the interview, he had had 3 Super Bowl wins, and he had a $60 million annual salary. He was married to a supermodel. And in the interview, he asked himself this question. He said, "Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me?" He said, maybe a lot of people would say, this is it. I've reached my goal. I've reached my dream, my life. But he said, me? I think it's got to be more than this. This can't be what it's cracked up to be. And when the interviewer asked him, so what's the answer? The only thing that he could say was, I wish I knew. I wish I knew. Now, I would imagine that if he were asked the same questions today, having achieved 5 Super Bowl wins and having a far greater salary, that he'd probably reply in the same way. There's got to be more than this. You know, in that interview, if you think about it, Tom Brady is saying basically the same thing that Jacob said to Laban as he found Leah in the morning when he awoke instead of Rachel. He said, you deceived me. You know, you promised me the one thing that would bring me true satisfaction, but you didn't deliver. Now think about Tom Brady. The same message. This is it. It's supposed to in this world. It's these things that are supposed to bring satisfaction, and yet it didn't deliver. I've been deceived. Now, isn't that the message here that Solomon is giving us as we engage in our worldly pursuit of happiness? Whether it's making great works for ourselves or living the life of entertainment, seeking satisfaction from the labor of our hands, that the message of our unsatisfied longing should cause us to see that all of the ways in which this world promises happiness, that they're ultimately a deception. That it should cause us to see that it can't deliver on them. That the things that we want deep down, can't be had just in this world alone. Now that leads us from looking at the pursuit of happiness to looking at the problem. So we ask the question, what is the problem? What is it that stands in the way that keeps us from finding true happiness and meaning and satisfaction in this world? And Solomon, in this passage, and he really says it throughout the book, he says that problem is death, in a word. That's the problem for every one of us. And that's the problem that Solomon uncovers, that in light of his death, that every pursuit that he has, pleasures of all different kinds, living with prudence and wisdom, hard work, you know, the benefits which come from it, that all of these are vanity. They are without purpose and meaning in light of the certainty that he would die. And so it's death that is the problem. You know, as long as we can go along in life and put blinders on and not really think about that, not think about death. And that's the common thing to do, isn't it? To set that aside. But as long as we can do that, then we are able to live year after year with the illusion. But as soon as we really begin to see things in light of this, in light of the certainty of our own death, it's going to do something to us. It's going to destroy our happiness. And we will be in the depths of despair. And we see that in Solomon as he begins to work through this process. You know, in one place in here, he begins to compare someone like himself, someone who's wise, who's prudent, who manages money well, who plans ahead, to someone who does really the opposite. They live moment for moment, and they're blind to what's coming ahead. In a word, they're foolish. Now look at his comparison in verse 13. He says, "Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness." Notice, this is something that makes sense to all of us. It is better in this world to be wise and prudent than to be foolish. But then look at what he says next, and look at how it distresses him. He says, "And yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them." Now, this event that he's talking about is death. He says, "Then I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been very wise? And I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come all will have been long forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool." He's saying there's no satisfaction to be had. That the problem is what happens to everyone, every single person, is death. And then he considers, as he considers the implications of this, notice how it drives him into a sense of great sadness and even despair. In verse 17, he says, "So I hated life." And in verse 18, "I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity." You can see there how he's getting more and more upset as he goes along. And then he says, "So I turned about and I gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun." Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. And then he continues on from there. He's really despairing of life itself. And you can see what he's done. He's used his wisdom. It's his wisdom that has allowed him to stand back and to see and to really consider the value of the things that should bring happiness to man. But when he looks at it all in light of the certainty of his death, it brings nothing but sadness and despair. And so we have to ask the question, is that a bad thing? You know, earlier this week, I spent some time with my parents, and when I was there, we went to a restaurant in which they knew the owner well, and the owner sat with us for a while, and at one point, he told us about a couple who had been in earlier that day. It was a couple who had shared with him about their lives, and he was very emotional as he shared it with us. They had both been very active. They had lived their lives together. They had lived in Colorado for many years, and their lifestyle had involved everything outdoors. They had done rafting and hiking and skiing, among many other activities. And this had been their life, and they had really enjoyed it. Now, they had just recently moved to Western North Carolina, and just about 2 months ago, she was diagnosed with ALS. It's also called Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, this friend of my parents there, he didn't know much about ALS, but as my mom told him about it, that there's really no cure, and that life expectancy from the point of diagnosis is usually about 1 or 2 years, he said he now understood why they had been so distraught, that there had been such a life before, what they felt like was a full life, and all of a sudden, they were being forced to reconsider that life in the face of almost certain death. Now think about that for yourself. Do we need to reach that point of hearing that message before we consider all the things that we're engaged in our lives and ask the question, what is lasting out of this? What is meaningful? What really will endure? know, Solomon is communicating to us here that it is in light of death that we begin to see life much more clearly. And yet our death is every bit as certain today as it might be at the point at which we might hear that message and be told you only have 6 months or 2 months or whatever it might be to live. And so now is the time for each of us to look closely at our lives. Now the truth is, we see this from Solomon, that when we do that, it may drive us to a point of great sadness. That's why this last point is so important. If our pursuit is happiness and our problem is death, then we need to answer the next question. What is our prescription? And when you go to a doctor, it's because you've got an issue, you've got a problem, you're sick. And so you look for the doctor to give you a prescription. And that's where Solomon takes us. And he says that you must not go after and rely upon the blessings of this life in order to find your happiness. Because when you do that, the blessings of this life will at some point be taken away. And so if we're dependent upon those, then we're going to be unhappy. And what happens when we recognize that they're ultimately all going to disappear in death? Then our unhappiness moves to despair. But instead of relying upon God's blessings in this life in order to be happy, what if we simply enjoy the blessings that God has given us? Because they are blessings from Him, and because we're able to find our ultimate enjoyment, our ultimate blessing in the Lord Himself. In that case, our quest or our pursuit can't be centered upon ourselves. It's got to be centered upon the Lord in all areas of our lives. You know, throughout this entire section, including our passage from last week, Solomon never mentions God until right at the end. You know, everything that he was doing as part of his test was done apart from God. And that highlights the importance of these last couple of verses in chapter 2, where he mentions God three times. Now, right here, he's just giving us a glimpse of what he's going to give us as he goes through the rest of the book. But he's emphasizing here the orientation that we need to have toward the blessings that God provides in this life. Now, after this point of despair that he's reached, he says in verse 24, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" You know, he's not saying here what we often hear, that you should eat and drink and make merry because soon you will die, and that's all there is to life. No, he's actually saying the opposite. He's saying that when we are centered upon the Lord so that we find our satisfaction fully in Him, then and only then can we truly enjoy the blessings that He has given us. They were never meant to be the way of life, the path of life. He was meant to be the way of life. You know, food and drink, it really is something to be enjoyed. There is enjoyment that we are to have out of it. Husband and wife together, there is enjoyment that we are to have together out of it. Spending time with one another, the things that money can buy, you know, a hard day's work, all of these things, they are things to be enjoyed. But they aren't to be relied upon as a source of happiness. And that's the key. That's the hard work that we've got to do inside. Our joy, our comfort, our peace, it's all to be found in the Lord. And it's only when that happens, when we're pursuing His goals and His purposes, that the blessings that He has provided, and they are blessings, are to be found in the right place in our lives. Now, remember how we had said that Solomon had made happiness his chief end in life? Well, in a sense, that's exactly what God has designed us to do. But the problem that Solomon had, and that we are prone to have, is that we follow the world's message to make it all about ourselves. It's a hedonistic pursuit. But the way that God has designed us, it's summed up in our first catechism question. What is the chief end of man? Man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And notice the word forever there. It's speaking about something lasting. In all of these pursuits, Solomon wasn't able to use the word forever. He uses the word vanity. He says it's only there for a time. But here, he talks about something lasting. Now notice the difference. He speaks about himself. I built, I planted for myself, I made myself. We see it over and over again, the use of I. What about in our own lives? What does our language look like when we speak about our own lives? Is it that? Or is it ultimately that we are pursuing the Lord and His purposes and His goals while enjoying the blessings that He gives us in our life? You know, Solomon's message to us is that we will never find anything enduring, anything lasting, anything of ultimate value or meaning when our pursuit is happiness in this life. And we saw the same in Tom Brady's interview. And we can see the same in so many people's lives today, moments after they're forced to reckon with their own mortality. We need to focus upon the Lord ourselves in all areas, all aspects of our lives. And really, that's what this table this morning, as we come to the table, that's what it's designed to do. Jesus said in John 14:6, I am the way and the truth and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me. You know, our chief pursuit in life must be to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. And it's only through the cross of Jesus Christ that we must go. That's the only way. That's the way we are given. And the table here is here for us to assess all the areas of our lives in which we have been going after our own pursuits, seeking happiness according to the message of this world, and to submit those before the cross of Christ so that we can have enjoyment and we can have true satisfaction, but only through the cross. We need God to do a reorientation within us so that all of our satisfaction is ultimately found in Him and in Him alone. Please join me in prayer.